Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Richard Fleming, a physicist, nuclear cardiologist, and an attorney. Over the last year and a half, many people have been dealing with SARS-CoV-2, a virus, and most recently, the vaccines that people have been encouraged to take, even though they're still under emergency use authorization. One of the things I wanted to do is provide a brief presentation to explain a little bit more about this virus and the disease COVID-19, as well as the vaccines themselves. While initially this slide may appear to have a lot of information in it, and it does, it's very important to get a basic fundamental grasp of what's going on when people get infected with the virus versus what happens when they get infected with the vaccines. The first part of this shows the virus itself, and it comes into the cells of our body through a number of what's called receptor sites. Everybody's heard of ACE2, but between ACE2 and another one called TMPRSS2, furin cleavage site, and neuropilin, this virus, one at a time, can come inside of our cells, unwrap the outer layer, the envelope, and allow its mRNA to get to our ribosomes, where spike protein and the rest of the virus will be made. Now, normally when this happens, one of two things will occur. Enzymes in our body will try to break down something new and present that to the surface of our cells, and that usually takes a few days to happen. If you've heard of T-cell immunity, the first part of our immune system, this is when this occurs, during the first 3 to 5 days. If the virus or spike protein, if that's what's being made, gets outside of a cell and comes into another cell, that takes longer, and that's about a week to 10 days, and it too is then presented to the surface of our cells, where our B cells that make antibodies can then respond. So initially break down bits and pieces, T cells 3 to 5 days, a little bit later on, a week to 10 days, the whole thing with antibodies. The same thing happens when the vaccines are used. We're showing two different types here. We're gonna start with Pfizer and Moderna down below because this is the one that initially came out with the lipid nanoparticles. That's a fat layer with cholesterol surrounding the mRNA. And when these are injected into the body, they don't have to come in through these ACE2 receptors or anything else. They just simply fuse with our cells and release billions of mRNA. That mRNA will go through the same process as the virus did, but we also know that part of it gets into the nucleus of our cells and becomes part of our DNA in all but 3 of the 23 pairs of chromosomes. And it will go through the same process. The AstraZeneca and Janssen, which is the Johnson & Johnson version, does it differently. It uses a virus called an adenovirus where double-stranded DNA is inserted. It comes into the cell and immediately has to go to our nucleus before it can begin the process of coming out to work with the mRNA. Same steps, entry into the cell, either reproduction of the spike protein or the virus, whether it's coming from a vaccine or the virus itself. The question is, what's included, whether it's hundreds and thousands or actually billions that come in from the vaccines. We actually know what's in everything that exists on planet Earth by looking at the nucleotides, the genetic code, and the proteins. And this slide shows exactly what happens when we look at the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2. Placed over time, we can look at the red line, the genetic structure of SARS-CoV-2, all the base pairs that we talk about that are included in the Pfizer, Moderna, Janssen, and AstraZeneca vaccines, and the spike proteins in blue that's actually made from that genetic material. So the genes are in red and the spike protein are in blue. What you see here is something that forms a W formation. And we know that when that happens, you have a prion. And a prion is an abnormally folded protein. And when that gets into your body, it causes things like mad cow disease and heart disease and a variety of other health problems. The importance of showing you that previous slide is to answer a very specific question that people have been asking for many months now. Is what's in the vaccines the same thing that's in the virus? And the answer to that question is no. We know that because this image here shows the actual spike protein, the genes in red and the protein in blue. If you look at what's in the Moderna vaccine and you look at what's in the Pfizer vaccine, all you have to do is look at the patterns. Do the red waves match these red waves? And you can see that they're all different. Do the blue waves, the proteins, match? And you can see that they're all different depending upon which vaccine it is, except for the prion-like domain. So the only thing that's being consistently reproduced in these vaccines is the harmful area of the spike protein. But to answer that very fundamental question that people have been asking, what's in the vaccines? Are they the same thing as the spike protein of the virus? The answer is very clearly no. People have also talked about whether this virus gets into our DNA, whether the vaccines get into our DNA. This paper is one that was recently published just a few weeks ago, and at the very bottom you can see where it was published. What we know is looking at all 23 pairs of human chromosomes, there are only 3 chromosomes that this genetic material does not insert itself into. So as far as the question about whether this virus, be it in the vaccine or the virus itself, can get into our DNA, the answer is now very clear. It does. The science tells us it does. The final type of vaccine that people are talking about is called Novavax. The benefit of Novavax is that it doesn't insert the mRNA or the DNA of this SARS-CoV-2 virus into people. But what does it insert? This graphic shows exactly what it does insert. To make Novavax requires using a virus called baculovirus that doesn't even infect people. It only can infect moths or arthropods. And an example of the cells that are used for Novavax, right here, this moth. The virus takes DNA to imitate the virus, SARS-CoV-2, puts it inside this baculovirus to inject inside moth cells. That DNA then has to combine with the DNA of a moth to produce bits and pieces of spike proteins that are then harvested and attached to a nanoparticle. So if you've been asking, do these vaccines have nanoparticles? Well, for Novavax, they clearly do, because here it is. By itself, that won't get you to develop an immunologic response. So they take soaps from plants, from the soap bark tree, and add it to this mixture to irritate you so that when it's all injected into you, you'll develop an antibody response. The biggest problem with this virus isn't that it's a virus. The virus is the delivery system. The harm comes from these abnormally folded proteins that are called prions. This is an example of what the spike protein looks like if you blow it up. And while we know that there's been human inserts for what's called the PRRA region, and we know that there's HIV glycoprotein 120 that's been inserted into it, which by itself is a prion, we know that when these were put into the spike protein molecule itself, it changed the top part of the spike protein, the area that attaches to your cells, called the regional binding domain. This abnormal protein here is called a prion-like domain. What does it do to people? Well, we know what it does to animals. After 2 weeks, 95% of the mice that were injected with this died. And when we looked at the brains of the mice, this is what we saw. This is normal brain. This is the area that's infected by the prion. It looks like a sponge. And so in medicine, we call this spongiform encephalopathy, or brain that looks like a sponge. In general terms, this is mad cow disease. When rhesus macaques were used, and those are primate models, monkeys that are very similar to humans, and we use them to best know what will happen to people, the areas of their brain that were damaged shows up here. And when we looked at it under a microscope, it shows inflammation, blood clotting, and Lewy bodies, these areas that are the types of prion diseases that produce Alzheimer's disease and a number of other neurologic diseases. The ultimate bioweapon isn't a virus. It's a prion. It produces damage. And you can see in tissue brain cells, this red stained area are prions moving from one neuron to another neuron, producing this sponge or mad cow disease, shrinking brains, and it's passed from something that has a prion to something that doesn't. This, again, is the spike protein. This is the ACE2 receptor, but this area here, this sialic acid raft, attaches to the HIV glycoprotein 120 to allow this to get into the cells. This prion attaches here and causes damage. You can think of this like a missile. This is the virus. This is the prion. This is what does damage. This simply gets it there. And it doesn't matter whether it was paid for by the United States or built in China, it's having the same devastating effect around the globe. If you go to FlemingMethod.com, you can see a variety of treatments that we have worked out in the research that we did in 2020. Available for you to download. It's free. Share it with your doctors. Share it with whomever you want to. It provides treatment regimens for people that got infected. And if you go to the site, you can see all four of these, extremely effective, and even the cost of what it takes to buy this regimen. This is the inpatient or hospitalized patients that end up with the disease COVID. A lot of detail that you can look at your leisure by looking at the website. If you put it all together, this is what the flow chart actually looks like. From outpatient getting the virus to inpatients with coronavirus disease. And in case you don't understand those terms, SARS-CoV-2 is the virus. COVID-19 is the inflammatory thrombotic disease. Cholesterol causes heart disease, but it's not heart disease. HIV is a virus. AIDS is the disease. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus. COVID-19, the disease. If you're worried about somebody who's been vaccinated or shedding, this next schematic provides treatment recommendations based upon the best available science, showing how you can use drugs that are already FDA approved for other reasons, which medical doctors are routinely allowed to use to treat patients if you have a medicine that's available for something else. Minoxidil is a drug that's used for high blood pressure. Many people use it for hair growth. Why? Because it also helps with hair growth. That's called an off-label use, and physicians are free to allow you to use something for a different purpose than what it was originally prescribed for. The FDA has already approved all of these drugs, both for the viral infection, COVID-19, the disease, for people who've been vaccinated or shedding. For the federal government to interfere with physicians prescribing medications that have already been FDA approved violates everything that we've been working with as a society in the practice of medicine for more than a century. The federal government has no constitutional power to do that. Physicians have every legal right to prescribe medications that they believe their patients will benefit from when you, the patient, want to take that medication. Additional point is that if you're worried about these prion diseases, even though we've shown you treatments, good old-fashioned heparin, which is typically given to people with little injections under the skin twice a day, has recently been shown to interfere with the ability of this virus to attach itself to your cells. Cheap, old-fashioned heparin interferes with the ability of this virus to attach itself. Finally, for people that are worried about whether you need to be vaccinated or not if you've already had the infection with SARS-CoV-2, the answer very clearly is no. This study shows that if you look for antibodies for people who've been infected, whether you look at IgG antibodies, or more importantly, IgA, which is the ones involved with your breathing system, your nose, your lungs, or your GI tract, people that have been exposed make antibodies to this virus. There is no additional benefit to making more antibodies when you already have them. And if you're worried about somebody who says, well, you don't have antibodies right now, you should say, good, because your body doesn't make antibodies to everything you've been exposed to. If it did, your blood would be too thick to move, and it would be a tremendous waste of resources and energy for your body. What you need are memory cells. And the next study shows us that people who've already been exposed to influenza and a virus called cytomegalovirus already have T cells that are ready to attack SARS-CoV-2. So these prior infections have made it possible for you to have an immunity to SARS-CoV-2 thanks to your T cells that are already activated by these other viruses. As a result of all this information we've been working on, I put together a book that will be coming out soon. Is COVID-19 a bioweapon? A scientific and forensic investigation. In this book, I'm releasing the information about published research, grants that came from the United States government to Peter Daszak of EcoHealth, Ralph Barrick at the University of North Carolina, and Xizheng Li at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. This book lays out where the money came from, where it flowed, what published papers were published by all of these individuals, and the grants and the patents that have been received for these viruses. It's very clear that this is a gain-of-function bioweapon. It's very clear who paid for it, and it's very clear that Dr. Anthony Fauci was aware that gain-of-function research was being done on this virus. But Dr. Fauci isn't the only one. The Department of Defense and a variety of federal agencies paid money for this virus to be developed, to prevent you from receiving treatments, and to encourage you to take a vaccine that, when you look at the data, doesn't statistically reduce your risk of developing COVID-19 than anybody who didn't get vaccinated. Thank you.